Welcome, Mr. Austin, to the committee. You want to just identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Joe Austin. I'm the Director of Safety and Risk Management for St. Louis County and the Acting Mine Inspector. Mr. Chair, representatives, just a quick overview of the changes that we're proposing. The bill before you represents the product of considerable work by impacted stakeholders. As Representative Ansel mentioned, mine employees, mine safety committees, mine management, our mine inspectors are all on board with the changes. There's been considerable back and forth for the last 4 months during this process, and it's produced what we believe is a good product. We believe we now have peace in the valley during this process. We are proposing to revise a law that was originally put in place in 1905 and establish the requirement for any county with five or more mines in operation to have a mine inspector's office. This currently impacts only two counties, St. Louis County and Itasca, who contracts for our services. The proposed changes do not impact the four primary responsibilities of the mine inspector's office, which are inspecting our mines every 90 days, investigating serious accidents and fatalities, safeguarding the public via our fencing of abandoned mines and mining sites, and communicating with our stakeholders via an annual report. Basically proposing to revise MS 180 to remove archaic language and to reflect our current practices that are working and have been working for some time. We want to be able to continue to assist our area mines in providing a safe workplace for their miners and continue to safeguard the public with our fencing. And we ask for your support towards those objectives. Is there any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Austin, for your testimony. Members, questions to our Representative Ansel or the testifier at this time? A very good presentation, obviously. And with that, the chair renews his motion that House File 1320 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Congratulations. Go home and rest.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and members. Have a good day.
All right. Thank you. Next up, Representative Mahoney. The chair moves that House File 1359 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Jobs and Economic Development, Finance, and Policy. Welcome, Representative Mahoney, and to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's an A1 amendment. If you would move that.
The chair moves the A1 amendment to put the bill in the form that Representative Mahoney desires. Any discussion on that? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Mahoney, to your bill as amended.
Well, Mr. Chair, I took the admonishment from the last time I came with nine testifiers, and I've told anybody from the department they need to stay over there, and if I get in trouble, they can come up. House File 1359 is a product of the Workers' Comp Advisory Board. It is it's agreed to by both business and labor. It covers a few areas and somewhat technical, so I'm unfortunately going to read more than I typically do. I'll go over the bill relatively quickly, and then in the appropriate place I'll explain the amendment. Section 1, currently the commissioner is required to investigate all complaints against a QRC, or Qualified Rehabilitation Coordinator, or whatever they're called. This amendment, or this particular section, gives the commissioner discretion, because the QRCs, they get a complaint that there's complaints against them over whatever. I mean, everything from they didn't send me a letter at the right time to they put me in the wrong particular job. There should be some discretion for the commissioner to say that's kind of not worthy of an investigation and spending money on. Section 2, right now the commissioner or the commissioner is required to, is limited to what he or she could investigate at $7,500 or less. This amendment removes that cap so that they may investigate disputes whether the provider's charges for a service or a product is excessive. Section 3, this is kind of the where the amendment comes into play, and I'm literally going to read this one. This results from a recent judicial decision involving the Special Compensation Fund. Home Insurance Company, which had sold Workers' Compensation Insurance Minnesota for a good number of years, was declared insolvent in 2003. Under Minnesota law, the Minnesota Insurance Guarantee Association assumed responsibility to pay workers' compensation benefits to Minnesota workers. The Minnesota Insurance Guarantee Association filed claims with Holmes and Liquidator for reimbursement and collected a percentage of such payments from Home. Home then filed a claim with the Special Compensation Fund for reimbursement of amounts paid for the second injury and supplemental benefits. The Special Compensation Fund denied Holmes' claims. They went to court. The court sided with Home, which threw the whole system into kind of a disarray. Basically says that if you're an insurance company and you go bankrupt and the Special Compensation Victims Compensation Fund at the Workers' Comp comes in and uses everybody else's money to pay it, now a bankrupt insurance company can come back and claim that as part of their assets and ask for that money back. Makes no sense, but that's the way the law was written at the time. What this section does is says no, they can't come back. If they're bankrupt and the state comes in and takes care of it, they can't come back and claim assets. The amendment, because the court has ruled, this amendment essentially says that Holmes' Court of Appeals decision stands, and this bill will have no effect on that particular court ruling. So, Section 4, and we have talked to many people on the Civil Law Committee. The Workers' Comp has 50 years worth of records, and in those records there are things that statements such as, oh, my family has a history of heart disease, my family has a history of Alzheimer's, my family has a history of diabetes. With the genetic, the DNA and RNA laws of today, and the state laws that go with that, we've been very clear and careful about what is public, what is private, what can be put out there. And unless this passes in this fashion, and both, again, business, labor, and the people on the Civil Law Committee that deal with data privacy, unless we pass this, we'll have to spend a significant, the Workers' Compensation Insurance Board will have to spend a significant amount of money going through old boxes with a black magic marker, marking off my family has a history of Alzheimer's or heart disease or whatever. And what I'd like to do, and I'll actually read the part that was I had to go and ask about. On page 4, line starting on line 10 to line 12, medical data collected, stored, used, or disseminated by or filed with the commissioner in connection with a claim for workers' compensation benefits governed by this chapter does not constitute genetic information for the purposes of Section 13.386. Essentially, we're just trying to say that no one sees these records other than a doctor, and they're not going to be released. They really cover what you would typically call your doctor. You know, my father died of X, Y, and Z when he was 90. Section 5 is kind of, and I was surprised that business went along with this, but what it is that when the workers' compensation system has a whole court system onto its own, and a worker gets hurt, files a claim, and the employer doesn't respond, doesn't challenge it. Goes through their court system, goes through their whole filing system, or claim processing system, I should call it. The employer is notified, not just once, not just twice, but a few times along the process. oftentimes the employer will call up and say, and not even respond by letter, yeah, I got some concerns with that. And then that whole involvement falls off, never to be heard again. The whole process goes through. Workers got a $10,000 health insurance bill. The insurance company, workers' comp, pays it. And then, because of the way the law is structured, it has been structured for a long, long time, they can go back to the employer and collect that $10,000. All of a sudden, when the employer gets a bill for $10,000, that's when they start taking attention to this. Now, understand that they've been notified that this is, there's a claim against you. There's a claim against you for for $150,000. There's a claim against you. It's going to court. What are your thoughts on this? It's in. It's gone to the first section, and it's now moving to the administrative law judge. The lawyers are working. They get another. The lawyers are working on a settlement. They get a number of notifications, and they never write, call, anything. They get a bill, all of a sudden they call. But by that time, the doctor's been paid, the hospital's been paid, the physical therapist has been paid, the lawyers have been paid, everybody's been paid, and now they want to go back to court. And they've been notified all along. What this section does is says, you've been notified, we told you, we tried to get you to come in and talk, you never did, you're out of luck now. And then Section 6, I don't know where this particular methodology came from. Under Section 6, workers' compensation has to evaluate, just like any other business, is the data that we're getting, you know, how many injuries, how many safety adjustments, all the data that they're doing, they have to go through it. They have to have someone correlate it. 20 years ago, 25 years ago, the methodology of the day was something called Six Sigma methodology. And it was put into law that that's the only methodology you can use. There's a whole other bunches of methodologies that can be used for this. This gives the commissioner the ability, that takes that Six Sigma methodology out of language and says the commissioner gets to make the decision on what methodology to use. Section 7, this the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals, like anyone else, like any other of our court systems, is a little overburdened. But because of the way it's structured, there are a number of spots along the way that the settlement between the injured party and the insurance companies have to be gone over and approved. What this says is, if they come to a settlement, if the the administrative law judge says, yes, this is a good settlement, everybody's been notified, all the process has been taken care of, we don't have to go to the Workers' Comp Court of Appeals and have them also do a second round of looking through it all, asking them the same questions and saying, yes, it's a good settlement. Everybody go away. That's the bill. Stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney, for the bill presentation. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a committee question. Have we killed a bill in here yet this year?
I don't think we have, actually, Mr. Chair.
Just curious.
Have we what?
Oh, nothing.
Okay, good.
Representative Mahoney, is anybody opposed to this?
To my knowledge, no, and the department has done its homework as it normally does.
Thank you.
Good.
Representative Kiefer?
And the data prior to this, we did check with our reps who are very concerned with that issue and make sure that we got her approval.
And Mr. Chair, I'd like to thank my counterpart on the Workers' Compensation Committee. Even though we're not allowed to vote on it, we get to sit there and say a few words once in a while.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. I just have a question about Section 4, about the privacy data.
Yes.
Can you just point to either a place in this bill or a reference back to statute that would guarantee, you had mentioned that the department basically holds all the material, all that data in a box somewhere and it's not shared. Can you point to somewhere either in this bill or somewhere in statute that comfort language that really does happen, that that agency is not going to share that data with some other agency or somehow make it public? Is there someplace in here?
Representative Mahoney, you want to tackle that or throw out a lifeline?
I certainly can. I just need to find the space. It's on page 4, line 12. It's under, all this is controlled and directed under section 13.386, which is the data privacy laws that, of our state that deal with medical, actually genetic information. So that's the best that I can do on it in terms of, and I read that last night and it looked like it covered it. So
with the reference back to, I'm sorry, thank you, Chair. So the reference back to section 13.386 has that language that you just described to us?
What it has is, Mr. Chair, it's a whole series of laws that cover genetic information,
mm-hmm.
And what can and can't be released in genetic information. Now, I'm getting a phone call from my friend. Current law, if you go to page 3, line 24, medical data which is not directly related to a current injury or disability shall not be released without prior authorization of the employee.
Perfect.
That work?
Thank you.
Representative Mason?
Thank you, Chair, and Representative Mahoney. And my question had to do with the data privacy as well, so I'm covered. Thank you.
Very good. Representative Benson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess to the author, but then I see other folks are around too. Is there no document retention schedule for, I mean, you made mention of 50 years, my eyebrows went up in terms of just the cost to retain that level and that amount of information. Is there no retention schedule for stuff like this that would, I mean, there could be a lot of money to be saved if we were a little bit more efficient with this. Can anybody help explain, or maybe that's another thing you could add as this bill proceeds?
Representative Mahoney?
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, to my knowledge, that's never come before the Workers' Compensation Committee. And the history of workers' comp bills is we just don't put an amendment on unless business and labor agree. I'm absolutely floored that this A1 amendment was agreed to at this particular point, as innocuous as it is. So, I mean, we can certainly bring up some of those people, but as far as I know, that's never been an issue.
Okay. Representative Mahoney, Representative Nelson has something to that point, and then we'll get back.
Okay.
And Representative Benson, when I was 7 years old, I cut off the tip of my finger. When I started working at age 16, I had to register and fill out forms for workers' compensation that my finger was cut off, and it's been documented. That was
a long time ago.
Long time ago. if I were to cut my finger off or claim that I did this on a job site, they'd need to have those records, and I believe that's why they keep the records that long. Mm.
Representative Benson, back to you.
I'm not going to fight with somebody that holds their finger up and it's almost gone. I have no idea how he lost it, so I'm not even going to pursue it. But, I mean, just from the standpoint of efficiencies and the like, it would seem like possibly that 50 years is a lot of information being stored somewhere that we couldn't do it more efficiently. And if at least maybe our dear friends and, you know, in the department or someplace could, you know, research that a little bit more and come up with some reasonable way to store this. And maybe they are going to tell me.
Welcome, if you identify yourself and.
Thank you. I'm Chris Iden. I'm the Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Labor and Industry. Mr. Chair, members, the department does have a record retention schedule, but the record retention schedule does require us to keep these records for 50 years, and it's for the very reason this gentleman mentioned, that oftentimes you have employees who have multiple injuries, and it's critical to go back to the other injuries, because there'll be disputes as to whether a particular condition is due to the first injury, the second injury, or the third injury. And a lot of our files are paper. Some of them are imaged. So we do keep those imaged documents under the record retention schedule as well. So we do have boxes, but they're not all in boxes.
Good. Thank you. Representative O'Driscoll?
Thank you. And the testifier might want to stay there, because this is kind of the flip side of the coin of what Representative Mahoney was talking about earlier. I understand the need for the retention of the data because of a pre-existing condition or injury sustained during a workers' as a result of a workers' comp claim. But my question has to do with, maybe you can comment on, Representative Mahoney said that things like your family has a disposition to heart disease, your family has a disposition to Alzheimer's. Could you please just speak to how that's an issue pre-worker claim or pre-employment that your office would need to have under this, under 13386?
Side.
Mr. Chair, members, when an injured worker goes in for treatment from a physician, let's just say a regular physician, typically that physician will take a history. Even though the history may not be directly relevant to an injured finger, they typically do take these histories. In the course of taking that history, the employee may indicate that his family has had a history of heart disease or arthritis, let's say, or something of that nature that is now in the medical record. And even if it's not related to the injury that is the work comp injury, it's in the records that we receive. And the genetic privacy law would prevent us from retaining that information. So it's not necessarily that we need that information. It's possible, depending on some diseases, that it would be related to an injury that's covered by work comp, but it's not necessarily even related to the work comp aspect of the injury.
So if I could just summarize that, in a routine visit to your physician, they may have a 8.5 by 11 sheet that's got lots of questions on there, where they're collecting just some general data on you because you might not have been in to see the doc for a while, and just kind of getting a baseline on you. That's the kind of information that you're saying you may discover. Some of those other kinds of things that may not be directly related but still would be covered as confidential information.
Ms. Iden?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes.
Seeing no further questions. Representative Driscoll?
Thank you. Representative Mahoney, I just was wondering if you could go back to Section 3. You said an awful lot of things that caught my attention, and I just wonder if we could revisit that. And it has to do with an insurance work comp carrier who becomes insolvent, and that the Minnesota Insurance I'll call it the Minnesota Insurance Association, or the Assurity Association, kicks in. Can you tell me, in the state of Minnesota, are worker comp companies considered excise carriers, or are they considered standard or admitted carriers? And the reason I ask that is one is paying into the surety fund and the other isn't, and I'm just wanting to make sure that we're not drawing benefits out of the surety fund that on policies that are not entitled to that. Excess don't pay, but admitted carriers would.
Senator Mahoney?
Chair, I can't. Maybe the witness can.
Ms. Iden?
Mr. Chair, Representative, they would be licensed carriers in Minnesota.
Representative O'Driscoll?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and covered by their premiums, actuarially accounting for their contribution to the surety fund and things in case they become insolvent or unable to pay.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, they would be paying assessments into the special compensation fund, and they would be licensed and subject to all the requirements of being licensed.
General O'Driscoll?
There are two funds, the special fund and then the surety fund that's under Minnesota statute under 60A. That's different, or?
Mr. Chair, members, the fund that's at issue in Section 3 is a special compensation fund, and that's the fund into which all workers' comp insurers and all self-insured employers pay into, which funds the workers' comp division and uninsured employees and that's the fund at issue in Section 3. I'm not sure what other fund you're referring to.
Mr. Chair, it was in the documents that we didn't have in front of us, but that Representative Mahoney was citing from, and he talked about the special fund, and he talked about the Minnesota Surety Fund, and I'm just, that's the part, I didn't have that document in front of me. All of a sudden it was going, I thought I heard two funds, and I wasn't sure it was the same fund, because one is and one isn't.
Okay.
Representative Mahoney?
Mr. Chair, one of the funds that I talked about is the special compensation fund, and that's the one that I believe all insurance companies that are selling workers' comp insurance fund, whichever side of the coin they're on there. And that is the Minnesota Insurance Guarantee Association. And that's the one I think you're asking the question about. So
Ms. Eiten, did you want to add something?
Mr. Chair, members, the Minnesota Insurance Guarantee Association is set up under the insurance laws, and that's a separate entity that is funded solely by insurance companies operating in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And they will pay the claims of an insurer that becomes insolvent. And with the home situation, it was a little odd. The Minnesota Insurance Guarantee Association did pick up the payments to claimants or policyholders of home. Then home had sufficient assets that it was able to reimburse some of these guarantee associations. So home reimbursed the Minnesota Insurance Guarantee Association and then came back to the Special Compensation Fund seeking reimbursement for the monies they paid the Minnesota Insurance Guarantee Association.
Representative Driscoll?
Happily ever after.
Insurance companies.
Okay. Seeing no further questions at this time, the chair renews his motion that House File 1359 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Jobs, as amended, to the Committee on Jobs and Economic Development, Finance, and Policies. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
The bill is on its way. Members, just a couple comments. Thank you for coming out on this cold spring day, first off. Secondly, we don't meet tomorrow. That's the good news. And we probably will meet one more time after deadlines to take a look at the large telecom bill that's being discussed and talked about and get a chance to kind of review that. But so check your email for that later on. It'll be after deadlines. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As it relates to the telecom bill, is that going to be a more of an informational meeting, or is that going
to be an
informational hearing? No action will be requested or taken by the committee?
That's correct. There'll be no action taken, just informational.
Thank you, sir.
Yep. Meeting's adjourned.